Hello again, friends, and Merry Christmas. I'm Corey Walker. Christmas Day is almost upon us, and I invite you to gather around the old part of the radio for one more set of old-time Christmas radio plays. We're tight on time, so let's get right to it. Our first radio play is from the series Family Theater, which ran from February 13, 1947 until July 4, 1956, all on Mutual. The series was started by Father Patrick Peyton of Holy Cross Fathers. Peyton's purpose was to promote family prayer and unity. In today's episode, little Steve's daddy didn't come home after the war, so he asked the Santa Claus at Weber's department store if he could have a new daddy for Christmas. The story is titled A Daddy for Christmas and was first heard the evening of Wednesday, December 15, 1948 on Mutual Network. Enjoy.
The Mutual Broadcasting System, in cooperation with Family Theater Incorporated, presents transcribed A Daddy for Christmas, starring Pat O'Brien, Linda Johnson, and Bobby Driscoll. Shirley Temple is your hostess.
More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. When I was a little girl, I once received a doll for Christmas. It wasn't very expensive, nor even the prettiest doll in my collection. But I kept that doll and cherished it long after my other Christmas toys had disappeared. It came from someone I loved, someone who loved me, too. No matter how high the gifts are piled, any Christmas tree is bare which doesn't have love around it. That's why it's so important for us to make our homes places of love. Not just Christmas Day, but every day of the year. And one thing is certain. Love is always present in the home where daily family prayer is a practice. Family prayer will bring love and goodness and understanding. The best Christmas gifts any family can receive.
Shirley Temple will speak again following our family theater play, A Daddy for Christmas, starring Pat O'Brien, Bobby Driscoll, and Linda Johnson.
Most people look on Christmas as a special occasion. With me, well, I guess it's what my little Stevie would call extra special. As long as I live, Christmas will be extra special for me now. But in early December last year, when I took Stevie to the toy department of Weber's department store, I had no idea, to quote Stevie again, how extra, extra special that Christmas was going to be.
Look, Mommy, look! That glass ball's got real snow in it. And look, there's a reindeer. And there's Santa Claus. Mommy, do you think Santa will talk to me?
But you just talked to the Santa across the when he was across the street.
I forgot to tell him something.
I think you asked for everything in the store. But okay, this is your picnic. As soon as that little girl gets through. Now,
Santa Claus...
Well, 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 what a nice little boy. Come here and tell Santa what you want for Christmas.
You know.
Huh?
I'm Stephen Hunt. You know what I want.
Santa, you took his list when you were across the street in Wilson's department store?
Oh, yes, that's right. I remember you now. I was getting you all mixed up with another nice little boy I know.
Mommy calls me a little scamp.
Oh, but you're a nice little scamp. I'll tell you what, son, I left my notebook across the street. So, how about you giving me that list of all the things all over again? First, what's your address?
Stephen Hunt, 2228 Elm Street.
All right, Stephen. Now, what do you want for Christmas?
Well, I want the sled.
Mm-hmm.
The bicycle.
With two wheels?
With three wheels.
Oh, that's a tricycle.
I don't want a tricycle. I want a bicycle.
With three wheels?
Uh-huh.
One bicycle with three wheels. I got it.
And I want a scooter, a pony, a wagon, and I want a daddy.
A daddy?
His daddy didn't come back from the war. I don't think Stevie remembers him, but...
But all his friends have daddies.
And I want a daddy, too.
I'm afraid a daddy is a little out of Santa Claus's line, darling.
well, Son, let's check that address again. Stephen Hunt, 20...
Stephen Hunt, 2228 Elm Street.
It was a lonely Christmas Eve for Stevie and me. Christmas away from my folks and my late husband. It's just a bit hard to take. But my job as secretary in a lawyer's office didn't allow me time for a trip home. Stevie and I lived in a made-over two-room apartment in one corner of a family dwelling with an entrance off the driveway. Mrs. Ross and my landlady, who took care of Stevie when I was at work, was visiting her daughter's family that evening and over Christmas Day. Stevie and I were alone. Stevie kept rearranging the few wrapped packages at the foot of our little Christmas tree. All right, Stevie, off to bed. I said to bed, not to the window.
I'm looking for Santa Claus.
Now get to bed. We'll come after you're asleep.
There he is now.
There who is?
There's Santa Claus. He's coming up the drive with a great big bag.
What?
Here he comes, here he comes.
Stevie, what on earth?
Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas.
Santa Claus, Santa Claus. I told Mommy it was you. What'd you bring me?
It is Santa Claus.
Oh, please, lady, don't tell me you don't believe in Santa Claus.
I'll believe anything now.
What'd you bring me? What'd you bring me?
Well, now, wait, let me put my bag down first.
What are you doing here?
Well, I was just flying by on my reindeer, my sleigh, when I saw what a nice Christmas tree you had and decided to drop in. Well, I couldn't find a chimney on this side of the house, so I decided to use the door.
Where's your reindeer?
My reindeer. I sent them back to the North Pole to pick up some more toys.
What'd you bring me?
Well, let's open my bag here. See what we got for Stephen. Well, bicycle with three wheels.
Oh, Mommy, look. Santa Claus remembered. Can I ride it? Can I? It's got a bell. It's got a bell. Mommy, what's the matter?
Nothing, honey. I'm just happy because Santa Claus remembered. He's really asleep now. That Santa suit must be awfully hot. Would you like to take it off?
I'll say. There. Now the beard. Oh, that feels better.
Why, you...
What's the matter?
You're a young man.
Is that bad?
No, but I just thought Santa Claus was older. I mean...
You mean you thought Santa Claus was older? Well, I hope you're not too disappointed. My name's Joe Regan.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Regan. Won't you...
Joe.
Won't you please sit down?
Thanks.
Now, tell me, why did you do this? Not that I don't appreciate it, but...
I had to. After all, I'm Santa Claus. And a swell little kid with a pretty and nice acting mother comes up to me and says, Santa, I want a bicycle with three wheels. Well, what kind of a Santa Claus would I be if I didn't come through?
But why Stevie? There must have been thousands of boys and girls who ask you for presents. Why Stevie?
Well, maybe it's because he asked for something different. He said he wanted a daddy for Christmas.
Oh, no. That's going too far, Joe. I mean, Mr. Regan.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I'm afraid Stevie won't get his daddy for Christmas. Maybe by Easter?
You don't think...
Oh, no, of course not, but already I like you a good deal.
Well, I like you, too, but... We sound like a couple of kids. A
couple of nice kids, I'll have you know.
Joe, you're crazy. You're the most audacious, the most... Oh, you're very nice, Joe, but that tricycle must have cost a lot of money. You'll have to return it.
I won't take that bicycle with three wheels away from Stevie. You do it.
Oh, no, I couldn't. He already loves it. All right, you win. He keeps the tricycle.
One round for Joe Regan.
But about that daddy business, that's out. But it wasn't out. Joe kept coming around, sometimes to see me and sometimes to take Stevie, who adored him, for an outing. We were married shortly before Easter, and we were lucky. We found a little furnished house in a nice section of the city, and I talked Joe into quitting the job he had in a furniture factory, where he did a lot of manual labor, into taking a sales position with the Jensen Hardware Company. Strangely, Joe balked at this and insisted he preferred working with his hands, but he finally gave in. After all, the new job held something of a future. The best part of it all was, for the first time in his war-born life, Stevie began to know what a home was.
Strike three! You're out!
I am not. That was a foul tip.
You're out! You're out!
All right, we'll have to ask the umpire. Jimmy, wasn't that a foul tip?
Uh-uh. You struck out. 1, 2, 3, you're out.
Oh, well, you kids are ganging up on me.
It's my bat.
Stevie!
Hear that, Stevie?
I want a bat first.
No, no, can't keep Mother waiting. Last one of the house is the monkey's uncle. So long, Jimmy.
So long. See you in the morning. Hey, you got a head start. I beat. You're me's uncle. Hello, Mommy. Daddy's the monkey's uncle.
Hello, darling. My, you're getting harder to pick up every day.
Well, how about it? Doesn't the monkey's uncle get a kiss? Better.
Sometimes it was like having two little boys around the house, but what mother objects to that? There were other times, however, when Joe was more than a little boy to me. Much more.
Honey, why did you marry me?
What?
Why did you marry me?
Well, how can you ask a question like that?
Well, when I used to pester you about it, I used to tell you Stevie needed a father, and that was my main sales talk.
Joe, I married you because I love you. I need you. You should know that.
Well, yes, of course. But the way you dote on that kid, well...
Joe, I love you so much. I guess I did almost from the start.
When I was Santa Claus?
No, silly.
Well, that's when I fell in love with you. Just as soon as Stevie told me he wanted a daddy, and I looked at you realizing I had a chance. You looked like everything I wanted. And when I got to know you, you were everything I wanted.
And Joe was everything I wanted. At least that's what I thought until late one afternoon in August.
Hello, Mary.
What's the matter?
Joe, the lights won't go on. They're on next door, and I checked the fuses. Joe, you didn't forget to pay the bill.
I'm afraid I did forget, honey. I didn't have anything to pay it with. I thought they gave you a second notice.
But, Joe, we budgeted. Why didn't you have anything?
I was fired last Thursday. The boss didn't think that
you
I...
You haven't been working a week and you didn't tell me?
I'm sorry, honey. I didn't want to worry you.
But you've been leaving the house the same time every morning.
I didn't want you to know until I got something new. You seemed to take it for granted I was doing so well. I just didn't want to worry you, that's all.
No, don't do anything to worry me. Just have the light company turn off our lights without notice.
I'll have them on again tomorrow.
But how?
I said I'd have them on tomorrow and that's enough.
Don't speak to me like that.
Well, stop putting me through a third degree. Now, I suppose you want to know why I got fired. Well, it's because I'm a lousy salesman, that's why. You're the only one who thinks I'm a personality kid.
Don't worry, Joe. You'll get something better. Something with a real future. And about the bill, I've got some money saved.
I said I'd pay that bill.
He paid the bill, all right, by pawning two pieces of his very fine leather luggage. That was our first quarrel. A couple of weeks later, Joe was in the yard cutting the lawn when Stevie came home from school.
Hi, Stevie. How's school?
It's fun, but, Daddy, all the kids have cowboy boots. Can I have them?
Well, see. Let me think about that a little, Stevie. No, we might as well start in being frank about these things right now. Come here, son.
Jimmy's got cowboy boots with red and yellow.
Stevie, I want you to listen to me. There are times when our family doesn't have much money and we have to get along without some of the things we'd like to have. Some other times we'll have a little extra money and get some of those extra things.
Then I can't have those cowboy boots?
I'm afraid not, fella. Not right now.
Yes, you will, honey. We'll go downtown and get you some cowboy boots Saturday.
Mary, I didn't know that
you... I'm going to get some boots. I got to go tell Jimmy.
You shouldn't have told him to get those boots just after I said we couldn't afford it.
All the other youngsters are wearing them, and I don't want him to know we can't afford it.
He's got to learn sometime
Well, there are things we can't have just for the asking.
Well, he's too young to learn now.
All right. But how can we pay for them out of my unemployment money?
I got a little money from my folks this week. They said help outfit Stevie for school.
Oh, I didn't know.
The way his shoulders drooped when he turned for me to walk into the house, I wanted to run after him and cradle his head in my arms like I do my other little boy when he's hurt. But I didn't. Weeks passed and Joe couldn't seem to find a job, at least not the kind I wanted him to have.
But, Mary, every time I think I can get a job, you say it isn't suitable. What do you want to live like anyway?
Joe, it's not me I'm thinking of. I just want to be sure Stevie gets all the things he needs.
I see. I'll keep looking for the career job so Stevie can get all the things you think he needs.
He tried, but that was all. Finally, I spoke to Mr. Emerson, and he offered me my job back. I thought Joe would raise the roof, but...
So you're going back to work, huh?
Just until you get something good again.
Oh, I guess that's best. No need for Stevie to do without things because I can't provide them.
That's all he said. Somehow I'd have felt better if he'd objected, even insisted I didn't take the job. So I returned to work for the first time since we were married. The third evening after work when I came home, the house was strangely quiet. Joe! Joe! Stevie! Stevie, honey, what's the matter?
Oh, Daddy, Daddy!
What about Daddy?
He went away, he took all his things.
Oh, no. No, Stevie. Honey, did he leave anything? A letter for Mommy? Oh, here it is on the table. Dearest Mary.
I know you'll think I'm a quitter and despise me for leaving this way, but it's going to be hard enough saying goodbye to Stevie. And I'm afraid you might change my mind and we'd all be worse off. I can't stay. Can't, Mary, because I can't be the things you want your husband and Stevie's father to be. I'll never do big things. In fact, I don't especially want to. I don't want to be anything more than just an ordinary guy. Bus driver, a mechanic, something like that. That's the whole story. Goodbye. And good luck. And if by some strange chance I do get ahead, I'll try to make up for this. I promise. I'll love you always. Joe.
That's how Joe walked out of our lives, less than 10 months after he had entered. At first, I didn't see how I could bear it. But life must go on. And then, of course, there was Stevie. I've written all Joe's relatives, all his friends. They haven't heard from him either. Poor Stevie. He's tried to keep up a brave front, but many times at night I hear him crying himself to sleep. Sometimes, at first, I cried in bed too. Then I started telling myself, at least this way, Stevie won't grow up under the influence of a father utterly lacking in ambition. And I got some satisfaction in knowing that when Jimmy Webster got a fur-lined aviator cap, my boy got a fur-lined aviator cap too. That is, I did until last Saturday, when Jimmy came over to our house.
You make swell cookies, Mrs. Regan.
Thank you, Jimmy. You'll get some as soon as they're finished.
When's Mr. Regan coming back?
I don't know. Jimmy, does Stevie talk about him much?
No. He don't talk about him at all. I wish he was my dad.
Jimmy!
I guess that's wrong, but Mr. Regan always played with us kids. Showed us how to throw a ball. Right way to hold a bat. Things like that. My dad hardly even talks to me. I don't think he even likes me.
Oh, your daddy loves you. Well, why do you suppose he's always getting you all those nice presents and those swell clothes?
If he loves me, why doesn't he act like Mr. Regan?
Jimmy, you've got to love your own father. If he doesn't seem to pay enough attention to you, remember he's a very important man and he has to keep busy.
I wish Mr. Regan was home. He's like the only dad I ever had.
was then I finally realized the terrible thing I had done to my Stevie and to Joe. And I'd had the nerve to nag him for not giving Stevie the things a father should. I'd even held up Jimmy's father as an example. Poor Joe. He must be feeling lonely, too. I suppose he was a department store Santa Claus again this year. Somewhere. Wonder what he's doing tonight. Christmas Eve. I could almost scream the way Stevie keeps looking out the window. Stevie, don't you think it's time you went to bed?
Just a little longer, Mommy. Maybe Santa Claus will still come.
What can I say? Oh, Joe. Joe, if I could only reach you now to tell you I've learned my lesson. I don't care if we're ever rich. What kind of work you do? What counts is you're good for me and Stevie. What counts is you and Joe. Joe, it's Christmas.
Do you think Santa'll come, Mom?
I hope so, Stevie. I hope so. But if he were going to, he'd be here by now. It would be like Joe to come back tonight for Stevie. Maybe if he comes back for Stevie, I can get him to stay for me. Oh, Joe.
Mommy, what's the matter?
Nothing, honey. Nothing at all. Okay, it's off to bed with you.
Are you crying because Santa Claus didn't come?
Never mind. It's time. I'll get it.
Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas!
Don, I knew you'd come. I knew
it. It's Santa Claus! Santa Claus!
Oh, watch it, my beard.
Santa Claus's whiskers are coming off. It's Daddy! Daddy! Daddy!
Hello, son.
Mommy, Daddy Santa Claus!
Yes, dear. Daddy Santa Claus. You're back to stay, aren't you, Joe?
Yes, I'm back. And Mary, I'm sorry I left the way I did. I was a coward. From now on, I'll try to be the kind of a guy you want.
No, dear. From now on, just be yourself. That's the kind of guy I want.
Oh, Mary. Oh, enough of this mush stuff. I gotta go about my business. Stevie been a good boy?
Perfect. Just like his daddy.
That's too bad. Well, let's see what we got here.
Ooh, a racer!
With big rubber tires.
Thank you, Santa. Daddy? Daddy?
What is it, fella?
I know where you've been.
You do?
You've been up at the North Pole making toys.
You know, I couldn't have thought of a better explanation.
That's the only one I ever want to hear.
This is Shirley Temple again. You know, poets often have the gift of expressing our feelings far better than we can ourselves. Here is a poem I think you'll like. It's called The Flight of Prayer. Who knows what wonders happen when we pray, what forces stir, what golden blessings run toward us on glad feet each time we say, in all sincerity, Thy will be done. We cannot follow with our mortal sight the flight of prayer. We cannot hope to chart its secret course. But suddenly a light dawns and the weight is lifted from our heart. For prayer has powers that we know not of to heal and comfort, to provide and bless. All the resources of eternal love move to sustain us in the hour of stress, clothing us safely round with life and power in even the darkest and most urgent hour. Thank you for being with us, and God bless you.
Our thanks to Pat O'Brien, Linda Johnson, and Bobby Driscoll for their fine performances, and to Jack Lyman for writing our play. Max Terre scored and conducted the music. This transcribed production of Family Theater Incorporated was directed by David Young. Next week, our Family Theater star will be Margaret O'Brien in Blessed Are They. Your host will be Dick Hames. This series of the Family Theater broadcasts is made possible by the thousands of you who felt the need for this kind of program and by the Mutual Broadcasting System, which has responded to this need. Be with us next week at the same time when Margaret O'Brien and Dick Hames will star on Family Theater. Tony Lafrano speaking. This is the Mutual. Broadcasting System.
What a beautiful ending to that story. You were listening to the story, A Daddy for Christmas, from the series Family Theater. The episode was first heard on December 15, 1948, on the Mutual Network. Next, we're going to hear a famous Christmas operetta from the Railroad Hour. The Railroad Hour, named after a sponsor, the American Railroad Association, ran from October 4, 1948, till June 21, 1956, on ABC and later NBC. The famous opera that I speak of is none other than Babes in Toyland, which is directed by Norman Luboff from the famous Norman Luboff Choir. The play stars Gordon McRae and Lucille Norman. On with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Railroad Hour. And here comes our star-studded show train. Tonight, the Association of American Railroads presents the memorable Victor Herbert operetta, Babes in Toyland, starring Gordon McRae and his celebrated guest star, Lucille Norman. Our program tonight is dedicated to thousands of young musicians all over the country who are studying tonight's operetta and its composer through the pages of Keyboard Junior, a magazine for young musicians. The current issue also features a story about the Railroad Hour, its stars, cast, and producers. Our choir, as usual, is under the direction of Norman Luboff, and our music is prepared and conducted by Carmen Dragon. Yes, tonight another great musical success is brought to you by the American Railroads, the same railroads that bring you most of the food you eat, the clothes you wear, the fuel you burn, and all the other things you use in your daily life. And now, here is our star, Gordon McRae.
Thank you, Marlon Miller, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, what do you know? It's the 1st of December, the beginning of the holiday month. So we're going back to the storybook days, to the days of remember when, days of once upon a time.
When you brought up my dears and are as old as I, you'll often ponder on the years that roll so swiftly by. And of the many lands you will have journeyed through, you'll oft recall the best of all, the land your childhood knew. Toyland, dear little girl and boyland, while you dwell within it, you are ever happy there. Childhood's joyland, mystic merry toyland, once you pass its border,
I'd like to have you meet some of the celebrated citizens of Toyland, though they're really, really old friends of yours. Fellow citizens, forward, march! May we present Miss Hood. First name, Red Riding. Lovely child, very devoted to her grandmother. That's our friend Peter over there. That boy has a mad passion for pumpkin pie. And say, there's Simple Simon and Miss Muffet, who doesn't care a bit for spiders. Tom Tom, the piper's son. And Little Boy Blue, boy farmer. Say, grab your trumpet, Mr. Blue, and let's all forward march. Say, who's crying? Why, it's Little Bo Peep. What seems to be the trouble, Bo? Now, you haven't gone and lost those sheep again.
Don't cry, Bo Peep, don't cry. To find your sheep we'll try. We'll seek them far, we'll seek them wide. We'll seek them low and high. Don't cry, Bo Peep, don't cry. Find your sheep, we'll try. We'll seek them far, we'll seek them wide. We'll seek them low and high.
So you see, Bo Peep, there's really no use worrying.
Never mind, Bo Peep. We will find your sheep, no matter where they be. So be gay, Bo Peep, go astray your sheep. Soon home again you'll see. Give a smile, Bo Peep, for a while your sheep may cruise in pastures new. Never mind, Bo Peep, we will find your sheep and bring them home to you.
Good afternoon, my dear, dear fellow citizens of Toyland.
Mary! Contrary Mary!
How are you, Mary?
I'm quite well, thank you, considering I'm so contrary.
Dear Mary, have you had any word from Alan and Jane?
No, Tom Tom. Their wicked Uncle Barnaby says they've both been lost at sea. And if it's true, then I'll never see my beloved Alan again.
Golly, Mary. It looks as if you'll have to spend the rest of your life teaching arithmetic.
And everybody knows what a dreadful thing arithmetic is. It's so everlastingly dull. Two and two just always seem to equal four. But I'll give it some variety. If a steamship weighed 1,000 tons and sails 5,000 miles, with a cargo large of overshoes and carving knives and files, if the mates were almost 6 feet high and the bosun near the same, would you subtract or multiply to find the captain's name? Put down 6 and carry 2. Gee, but this is hard to do.
Hard to do, hard to do.
You can sing with the men and me till your brains are gone. I don't care what teacher says, I can't do that song. If a pound of food costs 13 cents at 1:30 today, and the groceries so baldy with $1.05 to pay, and if with every pound of tea he will give 2 cut glass plates, how soon would Billy break his face on his new roller skate?
Put down 6 and carry 2.
One long arithmetic problem.
Psst, Alan.
Shh, Jane. Don't give away my disguise. Uncle Barnaby tried to have us killed at sea, remember?
He won't hesitate to have us killed here.
Do you think you recognize me disguised as a gypsy fortune teller?
I don't recognize you, Alan. You're my own brother. Oh, look, a gypsy fortune teller. Perhaps he can tell me about my own true love. Fortune teller?
Yes, my pretty.
What is your name?
Floretto. Floretto who flirts with the future.
Will you tell me my fortune?
Give me your hand. Ah, such a pretty hand. So soft. Ah, yes. I can read the entire future. For I am a Romany Rye, a timorous sprite of the wildwood. I dabble in magic, both comic and tragic, a witch I have been from my childhood. Hey! Great is my mystical might. The blizzard and avalanche mind me. I'm likewise a voodoo, a casting a hoodoo, a qualified artist. You find me. Floretto, Floretto, the gypsy am I, the past or the future to tell you I'll try. Good fortune I read from your palm at a glance. They notice I also collect in advance.
Floretto, Floretto, the gypsy is here, far into the future he quickly can see.
Your fortune I read from your palm at a glance. Pray notice I also collect in advance.
I'd be glad to pay you in advance, Signor Floretto. How much will you charge me?
A kiss.
Oh, dear. Now tell me, what do you read in my palm?
Your name begins with an M.
That's right.
It's not Methuselah, or Mehitabel, or Marmaduke, or Minnehaha. I have it. It's Mary.
You're wonderful.
I always thought so. Now, let me see. You, Mary, should marry a chap whose name begins with an A.
Alan.
Ah, yes, Alan. He's charming, gifted, and attractive. To know him is to love him.
But he's dead, and will never come back to me.
What's happening here?
Barnaby.
I will not have gypsies wandering around giving Toyland a bad name. Shoe? Shoe?
Now, you better be careful where you put your shoe.
Besides, I have an important announcement to make. I have decided to marry the lovely, though sometimes contrary, Mary.
Oh, no.
Mary.
But, Barnaby, aren't you a little, well, old for me?
Certainly not.
Besides, Barnaby, I'm in love with somebody else.
With Alan? But he's been lost at sea. He's asleep with the oysters.
Makes me feel like I'm swimming in tartar sauce.
I have positive proof that he will never return.
No, I'm in love with somebody new. Barney O'Flynn.
Mary? Who is Barney O'Flynn?
Oh, Tom, I can't marry that old ogre Barnaby. So I just made him up.
He's a lad from County Clare. It is the wild one comes from there. And be sure it is in his cover of your sleep. For the girls he cast a spell, oh, I know that very well. For between us from that spell I am not free. There's no calling in the land could his eloquence withstand. Should he speak to her as he has spoke to me? And me heart and its soul, you're the thief of me soul. Me sins that he have taken true. But faith of iron heaven and Venus the heaven, they'd never hold a rush like you. You're a slave.
forgotten all about me.
Oh, no, Alan, it's not true.
But you heard her. She's fallen in love with some County Clare Casanova named O'Flynn.
What are we going to do, Alan?
You must leave here, dear sister. Never return.
Leave Toyland?
I have nothing more to keep me here. Mary's in love with somebody else. Uncle Barnaby might try to kill us if he found us here, Jane.
I'll go with you.
Goodbye, Toyland. Goodbye forever.
Return in a moment with Act Two of Babes in Toyland. We have as our guest tonight the distinguished administrator of the Defense Transport Administration and member of the Interstate Commerce Commission, Mr. James J. Knudsen. And now, Mr. Knudsen.
The effectiveness of the nation's mobilization effort and its ability to meet any future emergency depend on our great productive capacity and our unparalleled transportation system. To achieve a well-balanced national strength, the nation must build up its armed forces, it must build up its productive machine, and it must build up its transportation lifelines. Because the railroads serve every part of the nation, carrying everything movable for anybody, interconnecting every region into an immense productive unit, they are the primary carrier in our transportation network, both in time of peace and in national emergency. As was demonstrated during World War II, the railroads were capable not only of carrying 90% of our billed military freight, but also of moving 70% of our intercity commerce. Now, with our current national emergency threatening to become even more serious, the fact that these essential carriers, the railroads, have been busy at work, expanding and improving every part of their plant is important to all of us. Since the end of World War II, the railroads have spent an average of more than $1 billion a year on improvements. Since the outbreak of fighting in Korea, the railroads have installed thousands of new freight cars in line with their pledge to increase the supply of these vital cars to a fleet of 1,850,000. This pledge has just been reaffirmed by the nation's railroads. They are making every effort to obtain the allocation of enough steel to build at least 10,000 new cars monthly as soon as it is possible to reach such a production rate. The Defense Transport Administration commends the railroads for their forthright action to increase their transportation capacity to meet the nation's needs and will continue its active effort to help obtain the materials required.
Now here is Act Two of the Lawrence and Lee version of Victor Herbert's musical fairy tale, Babes in Toyland, starring Gordon MacRae as Alan and Lucille Norman as Contrary Mary.
When Jane and I left Toyland, never more to return, we went to a distant land. We found work in a spot that was the closest thing to the real Toyland we loved so much, the shop of the master toymaker. We tried to forget our troubles in the busy preparation for Christmas.
All right now, hurry, hurry, hurry. Every toy must be ready in time for Christmas. See that all the music boxes play on key. Good, good, good. Now, see that every mama doll says mama.
Mama!
Good, good.
After all, we wouldn't want a mama doll to say papa.
Yes, well, I guess just about everything is ready for Christmas.
Yes, sir. And we're all beginning to sing the wonderful Christmas songs of praise.
Hail to Christmas, joyous Christmas, begin.
Kris Kringle will bring our king to be.
The spirit, the Christmas spirit, to be exact. I almost forgot to mention. We have a new sales lady, a recent arrival in these parts. Her name is Mary. Mary Q. Contrary.
Jane, did you hear that?
Yes, Alan, but what do you suppose she's doing here?
We must hide until we find out. Hey, you get in that packing box, and I'll just stand here and pretend to be a wooden soldier.
Oh, here comes our new sales lady now. Welcome, Miss Contrary.
Thank you, Master Toymaker.
Now, you are to be in charge of all the dolls. Have a look around at the stock. You'll find quite a variety of them.
Oh, thank you. Oh, how beautiful they all are. Dolls of all nations side by side on the same shelf. What a beautiful world that makes. Hello, little Norwegian doll. Hello, little Dutch doll with the pigtails and the wooden shoes. And this one, a British doll. Do you say Mama, Dolly?
Mita!
Oh, yes. And here's a French doll. Do you say Mama, too, little one?
Mimi!
Oh. If Alan were not lost to me, we might have had such beautiful dolls of our own. And each night I would have sung lullabies to them.
Oh, to sleep, slumber deep. It sleep while watch I keep. Dream and rest, that is best. Still your will the morning song from
Alan, but he certainly needs a paint job.
A paint job?
And he ought to have some medals on his chest. I'll just sew some on him. Oh, no, I forgot. He's a wooden soldier. Well, I'll just nail them onto him.
Oh,
dear, I wish you weren't wooden. I wish you were, Alan, so I could tell you how much I love you, how I ran off from that wicked Barnaby, and how I had to make up a sweetheart named O'Flynn to stay out of the old man's clutches.
You made him up?
He talks.
Mary, it's me, Alan.
Alan? Is it really Alan?
Oh, Mary, I'll never leave you again. But wait.
You're sure there's nobody named O'Flynn you love?
Never. Never.
Oh, my sweetheart, there's one test of true love. The toys.
The toys?
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that a toy is only worth something when there's a child to love it. Otherwise, it might just as well be wood and cloth and buttons. That's why toys always know when there's love around, especially at Christmas time.
What happens, Alan?
You just close your eyes. And if they feel that love is in the air, they start to march.
My eyes are closed. I'm listening and loving.
Look, they're starting to march. The wooden soldiers, the beautiful dolls, the jacks in the box. Why, they're all falling in line. Forward! March!
Oh, this is going to be a wonderful Christmas. Will you make it a Merry Christmas and marry me, Mary?
Oh, yes, dear Alan, but only back in Toyland.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Our lovely guest, Lucille Norman, will be back in just one moment. Meanwhile, our thanks to Sam Edwards, Janet Stewart, Polly Bear, Lou Merrill, and to all the members of our company. Babes in Toyland, with book and lyrics by Glenn McDonough and music by Victor Herbert, was dramatized for the Railroad Hour by Lawrence and Lee. The Railroad Hour is brought to you each week at the same time by the American Railroads. Marvin?
Have you made out your Christmas card list yet? It won't be long now until we're right in the middle of the holiday season, and that busy team of Santa Claus's helpers, your mailman, the post office, America's railroads, and the Railway Express Agency, will be working feverishly to handle the mountains of Christmas packages. Won't you help these hard-working folks and mail or express your packages and Christmas cards early? And when you do, please use Christmas seals as much as possible. By doing so, you help bring the priceless gift of health to fellow Americans suffering from tuberculosis.
Thank you, Marvin. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here again is our charming contrary Mary, Lucille Norman.
Thank you, Gordon. That was great fun. Made me feel like going out and buying up a whole new toy shop.
Well, let's do it, Lucy.
What's on the show train next week, Gordon?
Well, we're going to have some thrilling Johann Strauss music. The Gypsy Baron.
Mm.
And Mimi Benzel will be our guest. And we'll be waltzing, all over the place.
Well, I'll set my dial at 3/4 time. Good night, Gordon.
Good night, Lucy. You are wonderful.
All aboard.
Well, dear friends, it looks as though we're ready to pull out. And so until next Monday night, and the Gypsy Baron, this is your friend Gordon McRae saying goodbye.
Babes in Toyland was presented by special arrangement with the Tams Whitmark Music Library. Gordon McRae appeared through the courtesy of Warner Brothers, producers of The Miracle of Fatima. Our choir was under the direction of Norman Luboff, and our music was prepared and conducted by Carmen Dragon. Until next week, this is Marvin Miller saying goodnight for the American Railroads. Now stay tuned for your Monday night of music on NBC. Tonight.
Tonight, the voice of Firestone features Thomas L. Thomas on NBC.
What a great episode. You just heard Babes in Toyland from the Railroad Hour. The episode was first broadcast on Monday, December 1st, 1952. I realize I forgot to provide you with the original broadcast date when I introduced the episode. My apologies for that oversight. Anyway, we have just enough time left for me to play you a Christmas carol from one of the Three C's of Christmas, Nat King Cole. The carol of choice for today is Joy to the World.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room. And heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and heaven and nature sing.
Joy to the world, the Savior reigns. Let men their songs employ.
While field and floods, rocks, hills, and plains repeat the sounding joy, repeat the sounding joy, repeat, repeat the sounding joy. He rules the world with truth and grace, and makes the nations prove the glories of his righteousness and wonders of his love. And wonders of his love, and wonders of his love.
That was Nat King Cole with Joy to the World. That just about wraps it up for me this week here on Old Part of Radio. If you'd like to contact me, my email address is opr@telus.net, T-E-L-U-S. You may also write me at Old Part of Radio, 28 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFAS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a Merry Christmas and remember those who are less fortunate.